sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
Found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
Tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Now, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun down.
Well, welcome back to Texas Jacks. I'm Tim Howe. Ricky on the board. S&P Futures. We'll get them in a second. Reading other stuff here. S&P Futures were up last night. Now we're getting our ass kicked. S&P down 35. NASDAQ down 176. Not so good on that stuff. We are down again this morning. We were up and down most of the day, but we ended up down a little bit. S&P was down 18, NASDAQ down 61, so it's been kind of a rough week. But we have Professor Kevin. He was in the room a while ago.
Yes, we do have Professor Kevin. Let me ask him to unmute real quick.
Unmute thyself.
I didn't realize I was muted.
Well, you know, you did that to yourself. We didn't do that to you.
No, I did not hit the mute button. I just connected. It's all your damn fault.
Oh, well, you know, you can blame the other guys, but you can't really blame Ricky. He never screws up.
No, I'm totally blaming you, Tom.
That's all right. Well, if I knew how to screw it up, I probably would have. Just saying. But, you know, you have to know how to screw up. You have to know where the buttons are, but I don't. So there you go. So we're...
It's fine first day of spring.
Yeah. All kinds of crazy stuff going on, Kevin. Did you happen to watch the last part of the Wisconsin game?
I did not. I was traveling back from Cleveland, and then I think Wisconsin might have been a little later in the afternoon while I was on my way over because I had a class last night. So, I was kind of out of the loop on a lot of it. I saw some of the a little bit of the tournament, but not much. I'll see more this afternoon.
Do you have your own like place you stop for coffee and say hello to the person on the way back and forth to Cleveland these days?
I do have a certain rest stop that I always hit because that's where I need gas. But
well, there you go. That's good.
I hate that I'm becoming a regular between, you know, it's not a self-driving car, but I probably could just tell my car we're going to Cleveland Clinic, just go.
Yeah.
And it'd probably get me there by now.
Well, I don't know what was happening. That's why I asked, because I was, you know, obviously it was with daytime, so I'm still watching the market more than I am that. But I had the NCAA scores up there, and they had 1 second left, you know, seemingly forever. Of course, the thing doesn't update that. Then all of a sudden, they put 2 seconds left, and that was there for a while. Then it went back to the 1 second, and then it was over. So some mayhem must have happened in the last little bit.
It was like 72 Olympics to me.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. Wisconsin ended up losing. North Carolina lost. Boy, they were kicking ass, and they lost.
North Carolina coughed up. I was listening to that on the radio home after class, and North Carolina coughed up a 19-point lead in the second half. And even with 6 minutes left to go, they had a 14-point lead, and they got caught.
Well, the one kid, it was absolutely incredible. The kid on Commonwealth, he just hit everything. He was an absolute one-man gang. And it's... One of the coaches, there were all kinds of people, you know, talking about, and some of it was, you know, I'm going to say pretty disgusting to me, but maybe to other people it was fine. They had some guy on there, and, you know, we talk once in a while, or I do, the difference between immorality and amorality, especially in politicians, where some people are crooks and some people don't even know they're crooks. They don't even know there is such a thing as immoral. But the one guy was saying, well, you know, if you want to play in today's basketball, you need $10 million. If you don't have $10 million, you know, go home, basically. That's what the traders used to say. They're bring the dough or go home or something like that, right? So that we went through that routine. We're not even saying any remotely connecting any of this to school, right? And so then some other dude comes down, a retired coach of every one of them, I forgot which one it was, and he was saying a lot of these teams actually stay together for 4 years, and they might have one or two seniors that not only are pretty good, but they kind of know how to play the game, and especially early in the tournament, they are a real threat to these teams that are younger, even if they're paying everybody. And this kid from Virginia Commonwealth is one of the best players in the country. He just happens to be at Virginia Commonwealth. And somehow or another, North Carolina could never find a way to guard this guy. They'd switch off, and he'd shoot over the dude. You know, they never could have a guy on him or two guys on him. They just could never adjust. And when he started going down the last 10 minutes, and he was just taking them apart. So it's interesting, the different stuff you hear. And the guy said, usually these teams that upset people are led by a senior who really knows how to play ball. He may not be an NBA guy, but somehow they don't want to play defense. He knows how to break down defenses or one or two guys, and they're a threat. It's only a 40-minute game, right? I mean, it's not like it's 4-7 like the World Series.
So there's another factor that comes into play too, and that has to do with the confidence level of the team that's of the favorite. And what I'm getting at with that is you get a number of these teams where they're favored. They're not the top seeds that really believe. But you get a team like North Carolina, and when it gets tight, they panic. And you start to see that. It's like you see, in fact, we probably did see it in the United States versus Venezuela, where you just grab the bat handle a little bit tighter.
Yep.
As the game wears on. And I think that becomes a factor as well. That, just some of these teams don't, they got there expecting to just coast, and then you get up by 19 points, and you're thinking, we have it made. Well, this team starts to hit back, and, when the game gets down to 4 or 5 points, then they start to say, oh, my God, I have to make a five-point basket on this next shot, and they just aren't, they just don't cope with it very well.
It also seems, and this is my observation, because back when I played a lot of ball, there was no three-point line, right? It's my observation is if the team that's allegedly crummier, the underdog, I could have just said the underdog instead of allegedly crummier, if they wing in a few threes, because, teams are doing that, if they wing in a few threes, this is what Miami Ohio did, the other team immediately figures they need to come back with threes. So somebody could make two threes in a row, and they're up by six, which is no big deal. The other team comes down and launches three and misses them, and the other guys make two more. All of a sudden, it's 12, and it's a problem. Doesn't it seem like if one team wings up to three, the other team, no matter what the coach...
As you advance by rounds, because now teams that get a couple of wins under their belt relax and they can play ball. But those early rounds... they're made for the tight sphincter to create excitement.
Well, I mean the 16th play-in. Well, it's nice that everybody gets a chance to play one. But by the way, does that game count for the money, the play-in?
Yeah, they get paid.
They get played for the next 5 years or whatever.
They get a share.
Okay, it's a regular game. Okay, so the 16th guys, they do that for the chance to get their ass kicked by the number one team. But the 11 guys, I'm not so sure if I'm the sixth team, I want the 11th team to have a game under their belt. I think that evens that up tremendously. I mean, we'll see today, but who won last night? Who was the play in 11th? I forgot. Today it's Miami Ohio, right? Playing somebody? Because they were the 11th play-in, and they beat whoever the hell they beat. But I forget who the 11th team was the night before.
Yeah, they beat somebody a little more noteworthy. It might have been an ACC team or something.
I think it was. They beat...
Who?
Who were the guys that had the... I remember this. Who were the guys that got the big sentence for cheating years ago?
That's not Southern Methodist, is it?
Yeah, it was SMU, I think.
Yeah.
But I don't know who the other 11 team is, but I'm not so sure if I'm a sixth team I want to play Miami Ohio today. I mean, I have to, but I mean, they have a game in and I don't. Unless, you know, of course, guys could be hurt and stuff. It could go the other way, but it probably doesn't. Hey, I just started to go through this, Kevin. Talk about changing subjects. The Illinois elections, and I've been digging into these a little bit. You know, most of it makes me disgusted, but I kind of really was disgusted about the vote totals. You know that Arkansas only has 1.5 million registered voters in the whole state? Let me kick that up here, but I will.
How many of them are 18 or over?
Well, they all have to be if they're registered voters.
Oh yeah, but when I say how many people are in the state, you know,
I think their percentage,
a number of high school, grade school, you know, kids that are not eligible to vote yet.
I think their percentage of voters that would be eligible that are registered is like 65. It's low. So what does that mean? They got 2.8 million people that are over 18 or 19, whatever the hell it is. I didn't realize the state was that small in terms of people, but obviously it is. I mean, I'm the idiot for not knowing. It's not like they did anything wrong.
Well, Tom, this is an example of when it's actually okay to look on Wikipedia.
This isn't Wikipedia.
Because Wikipedia will actually have a population number that's probably okay.
Well, this is, I don't know who the hell this is. Number of voters and voter registrations is share of the voter population. They got to restate here. Well, those are, you know, I don't think whoever these guys are. State health policy, state indicator, whoever the hell these guys are. But, I mean, they seem to have like I don't know, Illinois. This doesn't sound wrong to me. It says Illinois has 6.7 million people registered, which I think probably is okay. And it's a 76%, which means you got 8 million some people, which I guess is the Illinois population over 18, isn't it? That doesn't sound like it's that far off.
Yeah, what percentage of the population do you suppose is under 18?
I don't know, but I'm sure AI knows. Ricky could find that out for us. But is voting age 18 or 19? I should know that, but I don't.
Say that one more time.
What was the voting age, 18 or 19?
Was the
voting age is 18?
Okay, that's cool. Ricky, could you find out how many people in Illinois are under 18?
In where? In Iran?
In Illinois.
Oh, in Illinois. Yeah.
So what I'm saying is that that they ended up having the biggest vote getter, who's the biggest race, was Stratton.
Approximately 2.7 million under the age of 18 in Illinois.
Right, so that puts us with about 10.5 total population. That's probably right, Kevin, I don't think.
Yeah, I'm looking at something else that just across the board in the United States, under 18 is about 21.5%. So that probably holds pretty consistently from state to state.
Well, as I'm being long-winded going into this, because it's a bunch of different stuff. I was going through the different people, and in the biggest vote getter, like I said, it was the biggest race for Senate, was Stratton, and she won by. And there's all these people that are in the race, you know, which we won't go into that. We talked about that yesterday, but she ended up with essentially 5% of the vote, which, you know. And any time you think that's a little light, even though it's a primary, and everybody says to me, "Ah, man, primaries are always like that." Well, okay, but the primaries, whenever you get to the point where you get to the national election, be it president, Senate, rep, whatever it is, and people says, "Gee, I can't believe these two buffoons are running." Well, duh, they got there because of the primary, right, Kevin? Whatever side you're on, I mean, you don't just walk down the street once every 4 years and figure you're doing something. I mean, you know, the primary is important. People getting in the primary is important. I mean, the electoral system doesn't just end that one day. But what I'm weaseling my way into here is that there's another article here from, and this is WBEZ, which I think was Channel 11 or something, and they essentially have a scorecard of the big out-of-state contributors. So if you start talking about somebody spends, $50 million on some Senate rate, that's probably high. And it's Carl's Dynamite Factory or something. If, you know, half the people vote or three quarters of them vote, it really gets spread disparately. But if 5% of the people vote for one person, all of a sudden it can end up meaning a lot, I think, just from my statistical stuff. And these guys give this scorecard here. And, you know, and I don't. I don't think, Kevin, there's anything wrong with WBEZ, but they talk about AI. It says, entering the final week of the race, Think Big, the Democratic arm of the pro-AI PAC, they must have a Republican arm as well, spent $1.4 million for Jesse Jackson Jr., the second congressional, and $1.1 million for Melissa Bean in the eighth. The PAC, funded by OpenAI stakeholders, won one, Bean won, and Jackson's kid lost. It says, it was a dismal showing for Making Our Tomorrow, whoever the hell these guys are, a committee backed by Facebook's parent company, Meta. Now, you know, these people have all this money. Kevin, I think we're all kind of agreed that when they start buying newspapers and start backing candidates like this, it starts to get scary. The group went 1-for-4 in the state legislature races they waded into, to the tune of about $750,000, which is not as much as these other guys. They backed Paul Kendrick, who won the nomination for a Chicago seat, as well as ousted incumbent Remy James something-something, and the losing candidates Aja Kearney and Adam Brown. I don't know who these people are. So they were 1-for-4. So I don't know what that says. APAC, evidently, these guys were huge. This is the American-Israeli Political Action Committee. I've actually been to a couple of their dinners. There were at least five PACs related to the APAC. They're not just alone. They got a bunch of them related. Tried to influence five congressional races, and the group saw two victories, Donna Miller in the second and Bean in the eighth. The group fared worse than the ninth, spending money to they get a little of this. The ninth district, and this I think really sucks, the lady, why can I not say her last name, the one who was shoved down by the masked guys. Kevin, you have any idea?
Abu Ghazali?
There you go. Thank you. They spent money to harm her chances in trying to boost Senate Laura Fine. Okay, so they spent money to hurt one lady, who actually came in a close second, and tried to boost Laura Fine. And they both lost. Evanston Mayor Daniel Biss won instead. Now, this was one that had all kinds of candidates, and she only lost. Ricky, why don't you look that one up for you? I think she only lost by, like, a little bit. So maybe their harming of her actually cost her the election. Put the guy in. So one APAC affiliate group spent big dollars to help Chicago City Treasurer Melissa Conyers Irvin in the 7th and to oppose real estate executive Jason Friedman. Yet State Representative LaShawn Ford won. So they don't always win. So here's the rundown. Affordable Chicago Now, whoever the hell these people are, spent $4.4 million supporting Miller in the 2nd District. Chicago Progressive Partnership spends $266,000 in opposition to the cat, whatever her name is. How do you spend that much money in opposition to somebody? What the hell is that? Elect Democratic Women Action Fund spent more than $500,000 supporting Fine, and I think she lost. Chicago Women spent another $5.8 million opposing Biss in the 9th, even though he won. So this is kind of crazy, don't you think? I mean, you're talking about millions of dollars and 5% of the people voting. I find it horrifying. I don't know what I can do about it, but what do you think? I'm talking too much.
It also sounds like they're not very good at what they do.
Yeah, they seem to be swinging and missing a lot, don't they?
And that kind of money. Somebody is sitting there today going, well, what the hell? You
know? What do you think? But, you know, remember Mike Flannery? He's been a guy, he's been a political reporter here for years and years. He retired a while ago, but he still does a lot of stuff during elections. He's Beverly guy, real nice guy. Matter of fact, I got called to jury duty way back years ago, and he was in my jury group. And as soon as I got up there, the judge goes, wait a minute, I'm the jury. He kicked him out because he figured he already knew something about the case, right? But he always took the Rock Island, got off at Beverly, walked home. He's a regular dude. He said that AI was all over the place. They backed some of these groups. And so were cryptos. We're all over the place. Now, I don't know what they expect to get out of people, but he said not one of the ads anywhere had anything against AI or crypto. AI, people losing jobs and they're going to work. You make sure AI doesn't just kick everybody. He said there wasn't one ad mentioning somebody was going to, on either side, Republican or Democrat, that was going to say anything about, you know, somehow regulating AI or crypto or something like that. Not one. So to that extent, I guess they were all successful, according to what he was saying. So I don't know how much that means, but I don't know, somebody
when
talking about it.
AI was in it. Does that mean companies like OpenAI or what?
Evidently, yeah. I mean, I'm not sure, but they all have their pack groups that have a different name. Crypto. Crypto, things shook out worse for Fairshake, is the pro-cryptocurrency pack. So they must be get the money from the crypto people, but they're called Fairshake. They're not called crypto. So these other guys are the sports betting also had a big pack. Sports betting pack is the American Future pack. That's their group. So you wouldn't know who they are unless somebody actually digs into it. Then the Pritzker's pack is the Illinois Future pack. So you wouldn't know that was him either unless somebody told you. So yeah, AI is here somewhere, but I don't know which one of their... Maybe I don't know if it's in the article. It must be. APAC. I don't know. Maybe if I go down further. But they all have a different name. So if we had a pack, it wouldn't be, you know, Carl, Kevin, and Chief pack. It would be something pack. It wouldn't, we'd have some stupid name for it, evidently.
I think we could, name it something that everybody can support and make it the Fluffy Bunny pack or something.
Yeah. What was the other guy with Bad Bunny or Good Bunny? The Bunny Good Bunny pack. But I didn't see anything, any ad that mentioned sports, but so maybe they're paying to keep themselves out of what these people are going to do or something. And, you know, I don't know what the motivation is, but I'm just saying, I'm just lobbing this out there. I have no conclusions here. I'm just... A lot of times, Kevin, when you put the questions out there, there is no answer. That's why you put them out there, right?
That would be a reason.
But I don't know. Just the whole mess just kind of makes the hair go up in the back of my neck, and I don't know what to do about it. But so, I mean, I'm surprised that somebody would actually run a whole bunch of money to kick somebody out. And when you run money to kick somebody out of a campaign, and you're talking about 5% of the people voting, and some of these people winning or losing. Yesterday, Kevin, I'm going to go through it. You know, some people won with 21 or 28% of the vote in their district because there's no runoff in Illinois. Now, this cat lady should be running off against the Evanston mayor because there was like 10 people in that election. And all she had to do was one person had to drop out. If she got those votes, she'd have won. So I don't see how anybody wins with, you know, 5% of the people voting and you only get 24% of the vote. What the bleep? Or why is this bothering me?
Well, of course it's done on purpose. So, so your question is, who does that setup favor? Consistently favor. It doesn't always, but who does it consistently favor? Does it favor the people who are backed by one party or another? Does it? Whose is it? Because that's going to be the answer to your question about why it is that way.
The last week, I don't know. You're not privy to this stuff, but the hottest one going here, other than the was essentially going for Durbin's seat. And you know, whenever this happens, whoever kind of gets in there, unless it's, you know, I'll use the word Hillary Clinton, because when she won a Senate seat, I mean, she had enough, doesn't matter what party she was, she had enough cachet that she actually got in Congress and right away, you know, had enough chutzpah to get herself on a couple of real committees. But generally, whoever you put in there, like this lady Stratton, whether it would have been her or Raj or whatever, Dick Durbin is a guy who's he's the ranking member in the Judiciary Committee now. When the Democrats are in there, he's the head of the he's a real guy. I mean, he's on some of the best committees, and whether you like him or don't, he's a pretty level-headed dude. What's going to take your new person how many years to get there? I mean, it's like what's his name? The guy who the Speaker of the House, the guy with the big ruddy face. I listened to him speak. The guy from Washington. I mean, he gets turned out of his local election. Tom Foley. And I'm sitting there thinking, how many of these morons in Washington actually thought that they were voting for the next Speaker? I mean, How do you replace a Speaker of the House of your district, unless the guy's, you know, Darth Vader? How do you replace him with some rookie schmo? And think you're, unless the guy's a swindler and a rapist. Does anybody even realize that you're giving up something you'll never get again, a Speaker in your district? I don't know. I just wonder, because the other thing that's got me going here is the last week, they went from, I'm not going to say it, they went from like the focus group, everybody's saying the same thing. The last week, every one of the three people that were in the race for well, the three people who were the top runners for the Senate, which would have been, the lady who won, Raja, and then Robin Kelly. Every one of them was being destroyed, well, attempting to be destroyed, by almost the same commercials. Raja took money from the guy who gave Trump money for the Bridgeview Detention Center, and what's her name? Stratton took money from some guy who, by the way, also gave Trump a bunch of money. The last week was nothing but an inundation of negative ads. And I have to believe that that all came from the outside. And you know what? That sucks. How could anybody check and see if Raja or Stratton's, if donor 25 owned a chunk of the detention center in Broadview? How the hell do I even find that out, Kevin? It's an accusation you can't even chase, can you?
Well, what really needs to happen is, and boy, we could use people who would do this and do it accurately and without bias, is we should just be able to shine a light on all of this stuff. Who is behind donations, who is behind ads, and so on, and spend a lot of time on that. I don't think there's enough money in the system. There's plenty of money in the system. There's not money to pay for that, because it would be opposed at every turn. But wouldn't you like to know? And in fact, I just stage it to follow up those ads with additional ads that say, by the way, that last one came from, and so on. I think that would be actually a service to people, so that they understood what the money is that's behind it. It's one thing to say this person got a donation from someplace shady, but it's another one to say who's telling you that.
And we go back to we talk on the show once every few months. What does that get you? I mean, what is this guy from the Evanston mayor? What does he owe? Who are the people we said worked against the cat? I'll find it here. There's somebody we rattle up. What does that get him? Now, what does that get that place? Now, do they own this guy? Does he take their phone call and he says, "I'm not doing that. Screw you." What do you get for that? That's the part I cannot put my finger on. And since all the years we've been doing the show, we have pretty intelligent guys on here, and nobody can actually give me. And I'm not asking that you could. Nobody can actually give me for $500 and I go to a coffee for your favorite Republican guy, or whatever, it doesn't matter, Kevin, your favorite Republican guy, you're going to have a coffee for eight of us, and all we all show up, we're even going to invite Carl. We'll show up and we'll pay $500, you're going to have some good booze, we'll have some shrimp, we'll hoist a few shrimp up. What does that get me? What does it get you for now giving him a check for 12 people, $500 for $6,000? Do I get a pat on the back? Do you get the phone number of his crummiest aide? Where do we start actually getting to the point where somebody gets to say, you're not voting for that? I mean, I'm curious where that is in the pecking order, because I don't think it's necessarily wrong to support people, but what does a guy get from the mayor of Evanston, now who's going to be a rep maybe, if he wins against the Republican guy, what does he get for kicking cat's ass, basically? I mean, what do you suppose? I have no idea.
Couldn't begin to tell you.
Doesn't it make you a little worried? It does me. I mean,
I don't know. I don't know anything about the candidate, so that's part of the problem.
Well, I mean, I'm saying there's... you don't have to know. What if you're running, and all of a sudden you're running for judge, and State Farm gives you $1 million? You go, okay. The first thing in the back of your brain, if you're from Chicago, has got to be, okay, what did State Farm think they just bought? Did they buy me every day? Did they, in the unlikely event, what did Don Corleone say? In the unlikely event I ever need a favor back, you owe me one? I mean, is some huge case going to land in front of you 25 years from now where it's State Farm versus five people that are mangled in a car crash, and do they expect you to throw it out, or do they expect you to act at least fairly? I mean, or do they expect you to forget you got the money? I don't know. I mean, that's the question I would ask.
Yeah, but when I say I also want to know about the candidate, I want to know about the candidate because I want to see what's the end goal for the candidate? What are you trying to become, not what the next office is, but what are you trying to become? Is the Evanston mayor 28 years old, or is the Evanston mayor 58 years old?
I don't know. Hey, Ricky, why don't you kick that up, the guy Bliss, the Evanston mayor. I see where the hell he is. I mean,
trying to build a career around his next station, or is it just his final, his final soiree in politics, and he's going to wrap it up after this?
Well, funny you should mention that, because
that's going to give you some mindset. If you're a big climber, if you want to become, that senator eventually who has a lot of influence, then there's a whole different amount of favor doing that's required than there is if saying, this is going to be my capstone and I'm done.
Well, funny you should mention that, because we had a few years ago on the show, and I forget who the hell, we had a special guest, Kevin, and it had to do with somebody was all over term limits. Actually had been coming up in whatever campaign this was, and I forget, the years fly by, so somebody came on the show, it was politically more connected than me, and I said, what are the drug companies, for instance, going to do if there's term limits or people start winging the old people out? People, like Carl has talked about with his buddy, if you're in the House for like three or four or five terms, all of a sudden you cross over into this, mess where you're being hit with checks from the same people. The first couple of terms, you don't do anything, or they don't let you do anything, so it doesn't really matter. But, and whoever was at him, I think it was a she said, they are already identifying, just what you said, Kevin, people at the state level that I think have this future that might actually be the senator or rep down the road, and they're already supporting them in their state races. And that's one of my biggest arguments against term limits, is that's the workaround. They'll just get people sooner. And, so it's going to take you, if you vote for term limits, you think you've done the right thing, well, you got to wait 10 years to find out if you did any good. In the meantime, they're just paying people earlier. So I don't know if they get you anywhere, even though they sort of make sense. So, because the workaround seems pretty easy, but just what you were saying, Kevin, they identify people, they think that this isn't the final spot for them, or they may think this Bliss guy is young enough to be a 10-term guy to where he's ahead of, the health committee, wherever the hell that is, and they better start paying him now if you're a drug company. And I'm sure these guys, they don't just throw...
I better get them compromised.
Yeah, Yeah. I mean, it's not like... To do this is actually not that easy. I mean, I went to, like I said, a couple of these AIPAC dinners. They are serious about it. If you're a donator to AIPAC, I'm not Jewish, but it doesn't matter. They still would want my dough. But if I gave them 20 grand, not only could I give them the 20 grand, I'm at a level then, if I give them 100 grand, I'm really at a level. Then I get to go to their national thing in Washington, and these are the numbers from a few years ago, so they might be higher. And I don't just get to go there and have dinner and have a kosher dinner. I'm expected, and by the way, encouraged to go see if I'm a schlump, not a schlump, because I've given them a lot of money. I may have five representatives on my list that I'm supposed to go see and talk to them about AIPAC things they're concerned about. And if I'm a real big schmo, I might have two or three senators on my list. So not only are you expected to do some work, but guess what? If you're in the, bullet business, I guess you could talk to the guy about the bullet business while you're there, right? How else could I get in to see a senator? I mean, so it really is a thing that helps you. I mean, it's a lobbying effort that is very severe, and it's also very, very costly. And one of the guys there said, everybody talks about everybody's in Congress forever. And the guy goes, there couldn't be a bigger hunk of bullshit on earth. Because there's more people, more turnover, this is probably 5-6 years ago, before COVID, because there's more turnover in the House than there ever has been. One district in Illinois has had somebody new the last four elections. And these guys take, guys and women, they'll offer to take every single one of those people over to Israel. So, but you're only going to take you once, you know, maybe if you become a center, it'll take you again. But if you got a turnover of 60 people, that's 60 trips to Israel. That's a lot of dough. So, you know, not everything you you hear is true, right?
Shocked at that.
Well, yeah, and oh, by the way, that particular pack, along with a handful of others, ought to be required to register under FARA.
Yeah,
because what they do is absolutely over the line, and that violation of that law, by the way, is a criminal felony. It's not a civil matter.
There we go with, we ought to have somebody enforcing something. We got nobody enforcing anything, Carl, unless they don't like you.
Well, you know, it seems as though we have some consequences of our refusal to enforce those laws that are now being served upon all of us in at the gas pump.
Oh, yeah.
So, there you go.
Well, I'm, by the way, you know that I agree with you. The son of an Irish cop, for God's sake. I agree with you, but I don't see it. I can't even imagine on a small level, Carl, if all of a sudden tomorrow, on where I'd get him, if the Dan Ryan, the Stevenson, and the Kennedy, so we're going to go through every ethnic group, if all of a sudden tomorrow I had 50 guys, sort of like Ohio, and all those expressway and everybody going over 90 miles an hour got pulled over and his car got impounded, can you imagine the outrage? What are you guys doing? I've been driving 90 for 10 years.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, this is, but this is the kind of BS that, you know, we often talk about the best government money can buy, right? And certainly that is true. But by the way, lest people get the idea that I'm just picking on Israel because, you know, of what's going on right now with Iran.
You're not. It's just another example of what you talk about all the time.
No. Well, let me point out that I have been, back in 2019, Supermicro was accused of their supply chain being essentially contaminated by the PLA, which is, of course, the military component of the Chinese government, which is inherently part of everything that China does. Okay, whether you like it or not, that's just the way they're. You know,
and what do you think? What do you think their presence here is huge? Probably.
Well, and anyway, the allegation was that the PLA had essentially forced the company to place undocumented chips on their motherboards, which had access to the CPU and the memory even when turned off. Okay, now think about the consequence of that for a minute. Encryption keys, what are those? Anyway, this was never proved, but it was an allegation that was leveled, and in fact, Bloomberg published it. Okay, this is not, you know, this wasn't some hack, you know, far fringe thing. Okay. Anyway, the company weathers that storm. I happen to have one of their boards in my server here at the house. All right. So I mean, they make high quality product. And it's not the first one of theirs I've bought either. But they just had SDNY just issued an indictment yesterday against a founder of the firm that controlled, well, up until last night, about $450 million worth of their stock. It's worth more than a little bit less right now.
Okay.
A sales manager who has absconded and is apparently now a fugitive. They don't know where he is. My guess is he is sitting in China somewhere where he can't be extradited. And a contractor who they also arrested. These guys had violated the export ban against NVIDIA's chips into China. Supermicro has for quite some time been running ads all over the place about buy our servers that are pre-configured with the current Blackwell series stuff, okay, that NVIDIA has. And I've seen these things show up in several different places in the technology, you know, related media that I scan. Apparently, what the allegation is anyway in these charges is that the company was deliberately diverting these things through a shell firm, which they did not name, in Southeast Asia. They of course know who it is, but they haven't said who it is. Now that to me is rather interesting too. where is this firm and who are they, that was then putting dummy servers in the racks and shipping the real ones to China full of these higher-powered AI chips. Now, that is not an accident, okay?
Why isn't the guy, if you're
going
to do
one this... And one of the people involved is one of the founders of Supermicro.
Why doesn't... Every time this happens between the last two totally, I don't know, incompetent or bought-off administrations...
Yeah.
If you're worried about NVIDIA chips getting to China, why don't you walk in and put the guy who's the head of NVIDIA in shackles? Because that dude knows every one of these things. He knows all these workarounds.
Well exactly. Here's the bottom line, okay? And oh, by the way, if you remember, Supermicro had Ernst & Young resign a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Okay. And there was this big scandal over that at the time. Why'd they resign?
The scandal lasted about 3 days.
Yeah, it did. And oh, by the way, why'd they resign? Okay, what is it that Ernst & Young knew about that made them say we can't be doing this?
I think we all know.
Well, now we seem to have an indictment related to, you know, to something like that, right? I mean, is it the same? I have no idea.
I mean,
but
if you're selling widgets, Kevin's widgets, and they're not supposed to go to China, and all of a sudden you get a big order from Ricky's firm in Thailand for all the same widgets that China seems to want, can we be that stupid?
Well, not only that, but then you have the compliance people and the auditors that show up, and the company that you shipped this stuff to sticks dummy equipment in the racks in order to con them. And by the way, gets away with it. Now, who's stuffing envelopes full of $100 bills there?
Well, yeah, or they're just dumb.
Well, Chief, nobody took the covers off these things to see what was actually inside the case, and oh, by the way, are they actually powered up and produce? You know, these things produce a lot of heat. Did somebody walk behind the rack and stick their hand over the air vents?
Well, I mean, you go back to the Bernie Madoff case. That's in my industry, and then when the auditors show up here, which they do, and we're a small firm, but. We had three of them in the last 2 years. And by the way, we were cleaning all three, which is really not really hard to do. Usually they find something, and that's what they're here to do. And not really. I mean, they're pretty. But you're talking about younger people that they know what they're doing. They mean well. There's nothing wrong with them. But Bernie Madoff had a firm, I hesitate to say this, a small brokerage firm like ours. They were bigger than us. But unbeknownst to the auditors, they never asked the question, by the way, what's on the floor above you? Well, that's the clearing firm that runs off the fake sheets.
it's the same thing. Okay, yeah. When you really get down to it, is that, you know, first off, if your job is to audit, okay, to actually audit, all right, then you're either criminally stupid or you're corrupt. If you don't catch stuff like this, I mean, there is no way. I mean, you're not talking about five chips here, right? We're talking billions of dollars worth of merchandise that moved through this channel, right? You know, that's the allegation anyway. That's what's named in the indictment. It's something like $20 or $30 billion worth of equipment. Right? That's not chump change.
Well, when they had the audits at Pullman, and Pullman had a design build contract for the superliners. You see in all the news today because they replaced the superliners after all these years. And there's been some others been built along the way from somebody in Indiana. But anyway, so they would have, back in those days, there were no computers, right? So all the audits were done on, you know, the 14, 16 column paper. They would descend with, you know, 10, 15 people. And they'd just be working all day long, just working. Go this area, that area, checking everything. And the contract was hopelessly behind. And the Pullman's position was they were still going to make $40 million on the contract. So everybody would go and do all this stuff, and my job was to give some of them plant tours and something. There's this one very attractive young lady, and she goes, well, I'm going to go out. I got over to PCW1 and go up and down the, give an audit of the cars. I got to go out and see all the cars. And I said, well, you're not, boy, I didn't know how to, I was politically correct even then. I go, well, you know, you're not going today. She says, well, why not? And I said, well, this is not a job for somebody in a skirt. And she goes, what are you talking about? I said, well, we're going to be going up ladders on, into these cars. There's all these guys there. I mean, you get the drift. Maybe tomorrow wear some pants.
Yeah.
But here, you know, I'm sitting there. I don't have to. I shouldn't have to say this, right? But I'm like, no, I'm not taking you out there. And he's a beautiful guy. And everybody's going to be standing at the bottom of the steps for guys. So who's kidding? No. And anyway, so then when all is together, they would actually, you know, the big army trunks. They would actually fill those things up, like two or three of them, with all the work papers. And two or three guys would haul it out the front door before there were computers. Then they'd sit down at the meeting and say, okay, what are we going to do? Well, are we going to drop the profit estimate from 40 to 20? And the day that they dropped it to break even, I had just done double secret from my boss. Go around all the guys I've made connections. He says, find out how much we're going to lose on this thing. And I had a document that said we're going to lose $230 million the same day that the place officially went from $40 million profit to break even. So my boss took it and stuck it in his bottom drawer, locked it, and said, don't ever show anybody a copy of this. And I said, okay. Hey, I mean, the world, they just didn't know what to look at. I mean, it wasn't like they were bad. If you want to know every single thing we did, they knew about it, except for how it all tied together. I mean, so it's not like these auditors are necessarily bad people, but at NVIDIA, last two administrations have given this guy the most second grade workarounds they've ever seen. Every couple of months, oh yeah, you can go solve this stuff. What did the guys say the other day that they're going to start the production line of the chips they were starting to phase out because China gets to buy those and now they want them? Wasn't that the deal?
Yeah, just you know, this is just the thing that gets me about all of this is that. We have, if you're going to have actual, legitimate national security concerns, and certainly every country does, right? I mean, anybody who thinks that, oh, no, that's not a thing. Yeah, okay, right. Oh, by the way, you did hear yesterday afternoon or this morning anyway, I'm sure, that it appears that our so-called invisible stealth plane ain't so invisible. And, oh, by the way, anybody with more than three firing neurons in their head could have told you this, because every single jet aircraft has this extremely hot plume of gas coming out the ass end of it, okay, while it's operating.
Is this the B-2 or the F-22?
No, this is the F-35 that was apparently hit yesterday. And there may be a second. There's a rumor floating around. The second one was not just hit; it was downed.
And okay, we have very few of those, by the way, right?
Well, they're also extremely expensive.
Yep.
Okay. You know, the reason we don't have a whole crap ton of them is how much they cost. But
well, that's why we stopped the F-22 contract, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, this kind of technology is pretty cool stuff, but it costs a crap ton of money, and as a result, you don't have a whole lot of it. But one of the things that someone seemed to forget, and this is, I may have in a prior time in my life done some, you know, some work with people that were selling things to certain arms of our government, maybe, you know, things you know. Hey man, you want me to write code to do blah? Yeah, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's how it works.
It could have happened.
It could have happened, and if it did, I still couldn't tell you
without what it was. Without admitting or denying, you know, it just could have happened.
Yeah, without admitting or denying, and without explaining what it was, because nobody's ever, you know, if I neither admit or deny, nobody ever said that I could talk about it either. So, you know, that's the way it works. The thing is, though, is that, you know, when I had my large boat down in Florida, we'd be out fishing, and the you know, Eglin is right there. It's the largest test range in the United States. One of the reasons they love it so much is because you got a lot of open water out there to test things, right? And things that go boom, you have to make sure they work. So they'd come up on the radio and give you a bounding box of GPS coordinates, basically a square, and it's don't go in there.
Okay. Your Cessna might be hit by a bomb heading for the ground.
Well, it's not just that. It's that, you know, you start thinking about this for a minute, and you're like, wait a minute, I got two diesel engines down below the deck of my boat. The exhaust that comes out of those things is about 1,500 degrees. And if this is a heat-seeking thing that they're playing with, it might come right up my exhaust pipe.
Yeah.
All right. So, I mean, apparently, though, that's exactly what they found was, they figured out how to, and now this is, if this is true, this is an entirely passive system, which, you know, one of the problems with air defense is that you light up a radar, and now you've just told me where your defensive system is, and you tend to get a missile aimed at it, you know, seconds later, if we're actually in some kind of an armed conflict. And that's a very high value target for me if I'm the guy that doesn't want you to have that targeting radar, because that's what you're going to use to shoot me. Well, if this is an entirely passive infrared based system, you have no idea where the hell it is. You can't see it because it doesn't emit anything. And so actually trying to figure out where it is and therefore how you blow it up becomes pretty complicated. This is always it's the same thing that we do with the submarines, is that how do you find a submarine these days? You don't sit there and actively ping it with sonar. You listen for it, because nuclear submarines in particular have all the pumps and stuff.
Obviously, you read The Hunt for Red October.
Well, but you hear the plant running because the coolant pumps for the reactor have to always be on. Okay, so it's even if the vessel is not moving, even if the submarine's sitting on the bottom of the ocean and it's not moving, you can hear the reactor running. Now, a diesel submarine is a different story entirely, because when it's on batteries, it's extremely quiet. And we actually had it was either Korean or Chinese diesel electric sub pop up in the middle of one of our exercises in the Pacific about 10 years ago. We didn't even know it was there.
Well, that's a big problem if you're on the coast of China. Problem is they don't have that much range.
Well, it's a large problem though when a torpedo comes out of the front end of one of those things, right?
Well, I mean, the idea was that you had the first iteration is you had to come up for air, and then they could run underwater because they essentially put the air pipe sticking up the top. It wasn't just the periscope that went up. There was a vent there. So you could actually run your diesel engines off the air coming from where the periscope was. That was a big advance. So you could actually run the diesels underwater a little bit. Not if you went further than the pipe, then you had to not. You had to shift over to the electric, but that was a big, big deal. Plus, you can breathe, too, a little bit because you got some air coming in.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the biggest problem with the diesel electric sub is that the batteries have a limited capacity, and at some point,
yeah, you got to turn the diesels on to recharge them.
Well, yeah, you got to bring it up at least to the snorkel depth, and as soon as you do that, you can be seen.
How much more efficient than 1943 are the batteries? They got to be light years better.
Oh, I'm assuming that they're full of lithium iron phosphates now instead of lead acid, simply because the capacity is so much higher.
How heavy were those things in those old subs?
They were the ballast for the most part. I mean, one of the fun things about a submarine is that now this is a little bit of trivia. There's one on display down by the Alabama down in Mobile. Okay, one of the World War II American ones. And you can go through it. It's out there. You can walk through it and tour it. And it's a self-guided thing. So I mean, I'll tell you what. You go in there and you go, these guys actually sat in this tin can for how long? Okay.
Well, yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of room in there. Okay. I tell you, it's a tough job. A little bit less so today because there's a little bit more space. But back then, not so much. And
well, they had you ever watch? By the way, if you guys are ever in Chicago and want to mesmerize yourself, I've never watched it, but I got the full uncut version of Das Boot.
I've got it. It's two DVD discs.
Yeah,
it's so long that it doesn't fit on one disc. Yeah. So and I've got the original, and it's a really good movie. But the interesting thing about this is that when they were figuring out all of the different things related to this sub, of course, being World War II vintage, it's you know, when they got their hands on it and keeping it from falling apart, even though it's dry docked on land, is still a big deal because, you know, rust never
sleeps.
Well,
they had to take the Japanese one at the Science and Industry to put it underground because it was just rusting outside.
Right. Well, so that's part of the problem. Is that so? Anyway, as part of this process, there is on all of these things is an unbelievable amount of ballast at the bottom so that it stays upright. Okay, and they're lead blocks. So one of the ways they paid for the maintenance and everything else and the restoration to get it into a condition where people could crawl through it and, you know, enjoy it as an exhibit was they actually took all that ballast out and sold it because it's quite valuable.
Right?
But the, you know, of course the fun part of that is, you know, once you do that, you could never put it back in the water, right? Because it would flip over.
Yeah, that wouldn't be good.
Yeah, that'd be a problem.
So Kevin, is your NCAA pool still with us?
Oh God, no.
I don't think I would have picked the guys that beat Wisconsin. I wouldn't have picked those dudes, I don't think.
Yeah, well, I my cousin works for Benjamin Moore, which is a Berkshire Hathaway company. So, you know, Warren Buffett has his $1 million a year challenge for the perfect bracket. And because Mike doesn't pay any attention to basketball, I always do his picks for him. And then we'll split when we get the perfect bracket. We have we usually are done by about 3 o'clock in the afternoon the first day.
Yeah, it's it's hard when you don't even know the teams. It's hard to pick the upset. I mean, if I knew how good this kid was on whoever guys that beat Wisconsin, North Carolina, you know, I might have rolled with it. But how do you know? All you see is an 11 playing a 4, and you go, I don't know, either one of these teams looks to me like the 4 is going to win, right? I mean, how else? You know way more about it than me, but still, 64 is a lot to know about.
Oh, yeah, and there's always, you know, what's the biggest upset line is always the 5-12s. There's usually one and often two of those. So, you know, what do you do about that? You can't.
How close did those guys come to beating Duke yesterday? They were leading most of the way.
We're in the ball game, but Duke started to pull away. The score looked pretty close. But
well, is Duke missing two starters or one? I know they were missing two during the tournament. One I thought was out for the year, and one was just out for the ACC tournament.
Okay.
I mean, if you started ever getting injuries this time of year, it's not good.
Carolina's without a player as well.
How far do you think the Miami Ohio? Do you think they get another game in them or not?
It was one of the last teams in, sort of. They had a guy injured that it was part of their explanation for not finishing strong, and they were right on the bubble. So they put out a lot of information saying, "Oh, this guy's ready to go," and then he's not.
Oh, yeah, I thought he had an ACL.
The tournament where everybody said, "Oh, they'll be good then. They'll be a good representative."
Well, the guy sitting on the bench with the ACL. How'd they say he was going to be good to go? I mean, that's not going to heal up in a week.
I don't remember which team it was, so I don't know if it's that particular one.
Who do you think? Joel was all over Arizona.
I told you Arizona on Wednesday. I told you Arizona was going to win it all on Wednesday.
The reason
I think so is Arizona is the kind of team that can win a high-scoring, free-flowing game and then can turn around the next game and win a rock fight.
What, you know, when we talk about the NIL, we have to have a day maybe Wednesday next week if the world calms down. The NIL, the news is dominated by football. But clearly it's all over basketball as well. And the guy yesterday was saying... you need $10 million to have a team, and my buddy Bill Murphy, who's a very staunch Marquette guy, all of a sudden, you know, the letters are coming fast and furious, and Marquette needs money to be a factor because they don't like losing. So now they're doing their best to get the $10 million up or whatever the budget is. Yeah, I don't know. These teams, do they make that much dough? I mean, is this if you're on the board of directors of Marquette, do you? Do you really care? I don't know. I mean, I guess you sort of do, but...
Yeah, a major conference basketball team is usually going to make... is usually going to be on the plus side of profitability. If you were doing, any reasonable kind of ROI, I don't think they're all getting, 15, 20% ROIs on it, But nevertheless, it's certainly self-sustaining for any of the major conference programs, and it probably isn't a lot of the smaller conferences because they don't spend as much either. But to me in college sports right now, NIL isn't the big issue. The big issue, and Matt Painter talked about it after the game, after Purdue's game yesterday, and it's really the tampering. As he worded it very eloquently, he said, if a guy makes up his mind he wants to transfer and he goes ahead and puts his name into the portal, which is nothing more than a database that says I'm available, he said, that's fine. That's his prerogative. But the problem is that you have all kinds of people who are calling up and, trying to recruit you, trying to make offers and all of that. And that's against the rules. These guys have not made themselves available.
Don't tell Carl that, because there's no enforcement.
There isn't enforcement, and yet we know it's going on. And even though he's not one of my favorite people, Dabo Swinney finally with his quarterback, got out in a press conference last fall or at the end of the season, and went through a blow by blow of the communications with his quarterback, who he eventually lost to transfer. But he went through in great detail who was contacting him, what it was about, what the back and forths were like, and so on. But I've seen it. Jeremiah Love. They asked him. After he was done at Notre Dame, they said, "Did people tamper with you?" And he said, "Yeah, all the time." he said,
"Did you hear? Who was the dude? I don't know which game." I was watching
Notre Dame.
The game I was watching, there, one guy was talking about the tampering is so bad that if say, I'll just pick a couple of name out. If Duke plays, Mary Schmuck, and there's a really good player on the other team that impresses the Duke, and I'm just using them as a name, impresses the Duke's coach, when they're all shaking hands at the end of the game, he'll just tell the guy, "We need to talk."
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
Hey, so they're recruiting guys during the game.
We already know how many of the coaches, that are shady to begin with. How many of them had show cause penalties? I documented some of that last year with some of these coaches in the tournament. That for several years they weren't allowed to coach in college because of the penalties that they had. And so we know they're shady people. And multiple offenders in terms of what the rules were at the time. And so I have no doubt that the same people are behaving the same ways now.
Well, we'll talk more about this next time when we get back to Carl here. But with the market here doing what it's doing, what do you think this? What is the sequence supposed to be? I'm a fatso tackle at Notre Dame. I think we should be playing somewhere else. I'm not. I put myself in the portal. Now that allows people to what? Call me, right? Does that open up the floodgates? When do I get to hire?
Floodgates, although you are allowed to designate that I don't want contact.
Well, what good does that do you then? To be in the portal,
which
you don't want contact.
You already know which either means you already know where you're going to go, or you're going to take care of contacting where you want to play. You're not, and you just don't want to be bothered with all the other crap.
So that means you've already hired somebody. You're not going to do that yourself. How the hell are you going to find out where you want to play unless somebody talked to you?
Well, you know who recruited you in the past, so you may have a relationship with a coach already.
So you already talked to somebody.
Yeah, well, you already talked, or you know who's doing. Let's just say if you do it completely on the up and up, you know who you're going to call. You're going to call places where you might have been a finalist before, and these guys aren't dumb. I'm sure he has representatives. Everybody has representatives now, but when Pat Coogan was looking at destinations and looked at Indiana a year ago, he knew what their line looked like. He knew how many people were leaving on the offensive line, and that there was an opportunity for him there that he wasn't going to get at Notre Dame. So, I'm sure when he picked up the phone and called Indiana, assuming he did, Indiana may have called him, But he knew what he was walking into, because especially when you're a senior or you're a fifth-year guy and you're going to move someplace because you're not starting where you are, you want to walk into a starting job and a virtual guarantee that you're going to have it. You know, nobody's going to totally guarantee you, but you want to walk into a situation where it's damn near a sure thing that you're going to get the starting job. And they know. These guys aren't stupid. They do their homework.
Well, but you could conceivably... You never know the whole system. I mean, he puts him. Let's say he's perfectly clean. Puts his name in there. He calls the Indiana coach. Gets his number on Facebook or whatever. Hey, I'm Pat Coogan. I'm your new center. I just got a guy yesterday. See you. Click. Now what?
Well, then you call the next place because you know what's available.
But I mean, there's got to be.
You may not go to a Big Ten school. You may find out you're winding up going to, a MAC school or something like that.
I have a feeling that Coogan already has had 15 phone calls from marketing helpers that they're making these calls for him.
Well, and it's probably right. I'm just saying, if you do it completely on the up and up, that's how it's going to
right.
Oh, it's going to work. But they all have hired their marketing representatives, and you know that's fine.
Don't call them agents. Don't say agents.
I don't mind that when a guy says, I'm going to transfer, and he goes through filing the proper notice and all that. That's, you know, I don't want to restrict the player's movement. They have every right, to go into the best situation for themselves, especially when you're talking about people who are grad students. They've already graduated from another school. They've given them the 3 years or the 4 years it took to graduate, and off they go. I couldn't have the slightest bit of problem with that. Good for them. That's a great situation. But I do have a problem with somebody who has not said, I intend to transfer, getting calls from everybody saying, hey, I can get you an extra million.
But now, in my industry, if I'm a broker, by the way, we are brokers and investment advisors, in case anybody cares, which you should care because we do a good job. As a broker, you get paid by commission. Okay, I can't charge a fee. I can't charge hourly. As an investment advisor, unless you go through a whole lot of hoops, you can only charge a fee. Okay, you can't participate unless you go the whole route of a hedge fund and put a hedge fund together and all that other kind of crap that I'm not going to go into. Then you can maybe get 10% of what you make, or 20% or something. That's the big bitch about the carry interest. Do these guys at this level, if they're not quote an agent, do they get a percentage of what Indiana's paying Coogan, or are they paid by the hour, or what are they doing?
No, I don't know.
Because it sounds like if somebody's getting a percentage of what Indiana's paying you, you're way, way into the agent territory, and just by definition. Just saying, I don't know, but do they have any rules like this?
Don't know.
I mean, if we do, maybe they should. Don't you think?
Well, it's the NCAA, so they probably have scoped out rules. Whether they actually, enforce them or not is another issue. Hey, I gotta go.
All right, take care, bud. Carl, what do you make of all this? I mean, I don't know what's. I think at some point, my economic background says, just let it go. It's a free market, and wherever it lands. And if you're talking about colleges essentially sponsoring professional teams, tax them like the professional teams, and if they compete with the NFL, I'm not so concerned about it. But I don't know how long this blend lasts.
The problem that comes from this is precisely the same sort of nonsense that you have with the caterwauling that's going on right now in Tennessee about Bill. Pending in our legislature to ban PBMs from owning pharmacies. Okay. Now, this, of course, has led CVS to threaten to pull every single one of their stores because, of course, they own their own PBM. All right. The legislature has found that this is an unlawful monopolist practice. Duh. By the way, in the state of Tennessee, in our existing code, don't need a new law for it, the penalty for doing those things, the same sort of stuff that's banned in 15 U.S.C. Chapter 1, includes the loss of your corporate charter. Now, obviously, if that penalty is applied to you, you're out. you're dead immediately as a corporation. That would be a nice approach, I think. But you know, that's my way of looking at it.
Okay, but
here's the basic problem, right? So I mean, you know, UT, of course, you know, boys say anything bad about their program, and they're rather unhappy with you. Big shock, right? But the reality is that what's happened is that as this business has taken over, so to speak, do I care that it has made the idea of me deciding to go see a game at Neyland essentially an exercise in stupidity? I mean, you know, for myself and another person to go and have any sort of seat at all, plus a place to park a car, plus a couple beers, whatever, you're talking about easily over $1,000. Okay, now that's for garbage seats. You want good ones? bring you more money. All right, but here's the thing. That is, to a large degree, an entirely free market enterprise kind of thing. All right, it's just like Disney raising prices.
Well, no, they got an antitrust exemption.
Well, no, but what I'm saying, Chief, is that if the people of this area decide they've had enough of that crap, okay, they can stop showing up at Neyland.
Right, but they can't have another team.
Well, I understand that, but the people, ultimately, this scheme runs on the gate and the beer.
Yeah.
All right? And ultimately, and you know, same thing with the Bears. And, you know, and professional sports, right? I mean, you know, it was not that long ago, I remember it because I was a kid, when you could go to a professional baseball game, and it wasn't insanely expensive. All right, now, if you wanted box seats, yeah, okay, those were, you know, those cost real money. But, down the third baseline, you know, roughly at about the bag, that wasn't bad. Okay, and so there's the market to a large degree determines how far this is going to be allowed to go. And when you have loose money and you have people being paid to borrow and you have all the bubbles and everything else, this goes a whole lot further than you think it would, right? Before the people push back and say, "Hey, guess what? We're out of money. Screw you."
You're missing 2 points in what you've explained here in the last 5 minutes.
But my perspective on this when it comes to college sports, okay, as opposed
right,
to
right, but back up here. Let's talk about your minor league thing.
Yeah.
By moving.
No, I wasn't talking about minor leagues. I was talking about, you know, like the Tigers or the Cubs.
Okay, but I thought you were talking about your minor league baseball team.
No. That's a completely separate thing because that's and I mean, there's all sorts of chicanery that went on with that move. Okay, and you know that doubled the price of tickets and doubled the price of the beer too.
But okay, let's go back to the pharmacy benefit manager.
Yeah,
and we had, you know, I think he moved to San Diego. A friend of mine, his wife passed, unfortunately, he was at. Name's John Dyer. If you go back into PTI or the Stocks and Jacks, he's in there somewhere. He was explaining the difference. It's probably, I'm going to say, not many people know as much about that business as he does. He was in his 20s, he was on the board of OSCO, right? That's how smart he was. Somewhere along the line, and we've had, you know, several adult beverages together, the reason for these pharmacy benefit managers is somehow or another, and I don't know the full details, maybe he sure does, they are able to get kickbacks from the drug companies,
right? Which, by the way,
okay, the pharmacies are not,
right?
So if somehow or another, and again, don't take this to the altar, if you and I open up a drug store and we want to call up and say, what's, you know, whatever Viagra, even though it's cheap now, we're going to get a price from whoever the hell makes that Viagra. And it's pretty much locked in. We're going to pay almost the same price as Walgreens. There's not this massive discount. But if all of a sudden a pharmacy benefit manager that, say, represents the firefighters union somehow is gonna direct people to our place. They can go to the whoever makes Viagra and say, we're gonna direct these people to this place, and by the way, they're gonna buy this much Viagra. I don't know if firemen need Viagra, but somehow or another they get a kickback. So once you allow that to happen, somebody like me, for instance, or anybody who's had my education is going to say, okay, ramp this out 2 years, and you're going to have those guys buying the Walgreens or buying
right.
the CVS.
Right, but here's the problem.
But the issue is, why are they getting a kickback?
Well, no, the issue is, why aren't people in prison? Because it and debarred, and the reason for that is any such scheme that touches a federal payment stream. Gee, nobody on Medicare and Medicaid goes in a pharmacy, do they?
Well,
any kickback that touches a federal revenue stream is a felony.
I understand that, and I'll go one further. I won't say this guy, but let's say he heard of a place that did a pharmacy benefit managing work for, let's say, a prison. Let's just say a prison.
Yeah.
And in the prison are a lot of people that it's not like regular society.
Right.
But, what's the not HIV, the hepatitis A or B?
Sovaldi, hepatitis C.
The one where it's an absolute cure, but it's $2,000 a week
for
40.
Yeah, that's Sovaldi. It was $70,000.
Yeah, it was $2,000 a week for 40 weeks or something.
Right, right.
And so the state says, we got all these guys in jail that have hepatitis C. We'd like them cured, by the way. First, but just because we're in the prison, and one of these days they might actually get out. So this is a cure. There are other drugs that manage it, but you're not cured. It's a lot cheaper.
Right, this is an actual cure.
Yes, it's an actual cure. And
By the way, this specific situation blew up the county jail budget in the place I used to live.
Yeah, it's not like I'm not just going to name one prison. It's all over the place.
Right.
And so the place said, well, we want you to fix these guys and fix them, cure them, and they go, wait a minute. We don't have like $80,000 or something. You guys got to pony up for this stuff. So the state said, okay, we'll pony up because we want it cleaned up. Then these guys went to the makers of it and said, here's the deal. Instead of using the managed drugs, we're going to use this one, but we ain't paying $80,000.
Right.
So they ended up. I don't. I never got the numbers. I never asked. But it's something along the effect that the state ponied up $50,000. And these guys got a discount down to like 35 or 40. So everybody they quote cured, where the state thought they were doing them a favor, they're actually making like $10,000 or $15,000 per guy or something.
Yeah.
And yet, if they just would have done that to Walgreens had no chance of doing that. Which
right.
So when you let somebody in the middle that's on the take, of course that's the part that out of all the stuff, when I leave planet Earth, the thing that's going to bother me the most about government and people, they never can think of the next thing, Carl. When you let people, for instance, let drug companies and other companies, but just say drug companies were the first, Forest Labs, we're going to go overseas and we're going to pay 5% tax or 3% tax, while the rest of you shitheads are paying 30.
Right.
Okay, well, that's one thing. And you might say, well, okay, if they did it right, they deserve it. There's no law against it, blah, 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 blah. You can come, people can justify anything in their own mind, right?
Right.
But the part that's the problem, in my mind, is if a chief's medical place is making about the same amount of money as Carl's, yet I'm paying 5% tax and he's paying 30, let's say I'm not breaking the law because I got my guys to talk to the IRS, and I work my way around the law. I'm not breaking it, but I'm not really doing it. It's shady. I mean, it smells, but it's okay, right, by the law. Well, now, if we're both making $10 million a year, and you're ponying up $3 million to the government, you know, and paying some dividends and doing the right thing, and I'm paying right. $500,000 to the government. All of a sudden, right. all of a sudden, Ricky has a new drug at his small mind-pie, you know, drug research facility or some hospital, and now we both go out to bid for that drug that neither one of us did anything for.
Right.
No research, no nothing. Who do you think outbids who?
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
oh, yeah.
So it's not just the first step. It's you got to follow it through. And I don't think, you look at the people that we just elected here, and I don't think any of these people are capable of following it through. It's not their business. I mean, Bob Golden, that used to be on the show until he passed, Bob, he was one of Kevin's best, probably Kevin's best friend, a friend of mine as well. He was one of these guys that worked for a law. Well, he was a lawyer, but he actually worked for an accounting firm, and he would take these, you know, these play people overseas, you know, the double Dutch sandwich, all that stuff. You know, Bob was involved.
All that garbage.
Bob was involved in the design and nurturing of that stuff, right? He was one of the top right. guys. And matter of fact, he taught a graduate class at Notre Dame. That he goes, there was no book on it. I had to write it all myself.
Right.
But I said, one day, we're having a couple of beers. I go, hey, Bob, how the hell do you keep a straight face? Because you got a great sense of humor. When you're talking to these idiots and getting this stuff allegedly approved.
Right.
My nickname was Howard. He goes, Howard, at $800 an hour, you learn how to keep a straight face.
Well, you know.
And this is 20 years ago. $800 an hour was a lot of dough.
Yeah.
He goes, you learn how to keep a straight face. I go, how dumb are these guys? He goes, really dumb.
Really dumb, right. Yeah.
Well, he goes, they're not dumb. They're just there to get their little piece of flesh. You go in with this and you say, oh, you can't do this. Well, how about this? Well, okay, that's okay. It still got you 80% of where you wanted to go.
Right. No, I know. It's utterly ridiculous. And yet, you know, here we are. And this is the biggest issue I have with all this stuff is that, you know, and I put up a column on this, you know, related to all of the scamming that has been found. It starts with the Minnesota thing, right?
Yeah.
With the Leering Center and all this nonsense.
It didn't start there. They learned it from somebody else.
Well, yeah, okay, so this is where I'm going.
Yeah.
All right, so a bunch of this stuff starts there. Then you have these, and a lot of this was billed through Medicaid, all right? That DOJI releases that database. You can grab the provider numbers and such from other publicly available databases, which are out there. You can download them. Anybody can grab them. You stick these into a basic database, like any, you know, I mean, like what I run here for other purposes, and you start doing joins on these tables, and you find a number of very interesting things. One of them is that this was, when this started to be detected and looked into, some of these providers were barred. Okay, now, you know, that has a way of happening when somebody thinks you're robbing somebody, right?
Yeah.
All right, so they set up another provider in Florida with the same phone number as the place that got barred. Now tell me how that goes through.
They're going to say that's very clever.
I would say that, boy, you want to talk about, you know, there's this thing in the law called scienter, you know, which is the premise that you have to have knowledge of, you know, it's part of the element of the offense, is knowledge that what you're doing is wrong, right? Same thing with mens rea in the criminal context. But the two are related to each other in that, when in terms of the context of proving the offense, one of the ways you prove an offense is that the guy knew what he was doing was illegal. Okay, it wasn't just that he had a criminal mind.
But he was
fully aware of it. Now, if you get barred in one place and then you turn around because they're chasing you for fraud, and you're going ahead and you turn around and set up in another.
But the thing that we constantly joust about, and I think it's good for listeners. You bring something up, and it's not like I'm always trying to take the other side, but it's no different than when I bought my truck, and every day I started to get people calling for a warranty.
Yeah.
And I'd say, It says, if you don't want these calls again or something, something, press, you know, X or press 7 or something. So I press 7. Well, the next day, instead of a 414 area code, it's 255.
Right.
And so, I mean, it's not like they don't learn these tricks. I mean, they're all out there.
Well, it's and oh, by the way, those kinds of spam calls are illegal too.
Well, we're going to go to a break here, but think on this. Some of what you rail on, and I don't, you know, I know you know what I'm talking about. So it's, you know, it's hard to stump the Carl, but a lot of stuff that you are. You know, it's funny. The more I think I know, the easier it is to stump me. the more you know, the more it is you don't know. But you know, a lot of the stuff that you're talking about. And we rarely get into this because I don't want to talk that much about my industry because it bothers the living Jesus out of me, is if there's a regulator involved, all your thoughts about, you know, taking them out and shooting them or hanging them or fining them or putting them in jail, none of that's ever going to happen because the regulator gets in the middle. Say for instance, Kirstner or the guys in the White House, just because I see this trading all day long and it's kind of a hot button issue for me.
Right.
It's obvious to me people are front running all this stuff.
Well, yeah.
So if this was in a court of law, and you were to say, "Oh God, you made, you know, $5,000 in this trade because, you know, before Trump went to the X, he told you about it and you made a trade." I mean, you know, whoever it is. I mean, you know, it could have been any other.
No,
president.
I got you.
So
yeah.
If somehow or another you get indicted by the state of Illinois, which sure as hell isn't going to happen, or somebody else, and it's in court, you got a real problem.
Right.
But if it's all of a sudden the SEC finds you, even if it's a public outcry causes the, you know, if it's so obvious, if somebody like you and I print on the Tribune, nobody reads anymore, if these five trades happen and they're traced right back, how we'd ever find that, I don't know, and they're traced right back here, just like, you know, the guys that bought puts before 9/11. If there's such an amazing public outcry that, say, the SEC actually gets off their dead ass and does something for somebody other than somebody small, if they sit there and go, okay, Kirstner, looks to me like you made $5 million on this trade, they're going to say, instead of we want $50 million because there's a 1 in 10 chance we're ever going to find you without this outcry, it should be whatever you made times your chances of being caught. Instead, again, Kirstner's going to say, how about without admitting or denying, I give you $1 million, and they're going to say, okay.
Yeah, and they'll be like, yeah, all right,
that's
whatever.
Fine, because it's a scalp on their wall. They did something. I mean, every one of these fines going back, you know, the 15, 20 years we've been doing the show, 16 years.
Yeah.
Every fine to Wells Fargo, every fine to whatever it was, you name the place. Every one of those fines, I'm going to say, is a minuscule piece of what the place made by the activity.
Yeah.
So even if, you know, the Carls of the world say they finally got him, no, what they got is keep going. You made $40 million and the fine was $5 million.
Right.
You go, girl. it's totally different than being in the justice system where you actually might have to go to jail or pay the whole thing back. It's possible. S&P Futures down 22, and NASDAQ Futures down 113. We're supposed to be up today. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jacks. With devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Loading up, Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Ricky on the board. S&P Futures down 21. NASDAQ Futures down 105. Now today is the last day the triple witch. So the March number, which is the SPHs, go off the board, and we're going to trade the June is now front month, and that's the SPMs, the sperms they used to call them on the floor. As in the Septembers are the spoos. That's the easiest to say. So. Even the March and the June S&P futures are all known as the SPOOs because it's the easiest one to say. Even though they are the SPMs, because that M is the month of June. A little piece of trivia there. Over in Europe, the DAX is actually up a little bit, up 35.1, and we were up last night. FTSE up 18.2%, CAC around up 17.2%, so up but meager. Nikkei down another 1,800 points, so that is not. Asian markets mostly decline as Iran war dents risk sentiment. Whatever the hell that means. Hang Seng down 223.9%. Shanghai down 49.1%. Shanghai has actually been moving a little bit the last week. Usually they're pretty steady. Bonds up another 2 basis points, 4.3 now is the 10-year. That's the thing you have to watch, in my opinion. Oil actually down $1.07, 95.07. Brent down $1.55, but still a very lofty 107.10. RBOB gas down a penny, but still 317. So you have to add onto that. Now, this is the wholesale price, so kind of what's coming down your way. You got to add, I don't know, I'll get Carl's estimate, 20 to 30 cents for profit and transportation at least, and 90 some cents in Illinois for taxes. That puts you at 450, the way I do my math, and I'm usually pretty good at math. Gold up 76 bucks, but it's a dead cat bounce here. 4682 was 5100 like 2 weeks ago, so it's back up 2%, but it was down 10. Silver up a buck, 72.21. Foreign exchange, dollar's down here. As central banks have turned hawkish, dollar actually is up to 115.6. It was lower than that, but still, it's nowhere near the 117. It's still higher than it was, but the pound's back up to almost to 134, so the dollar is getting clobbered a little bit here. Crypto, up 75 bucks, 70,397. A lot of stuff there. Ricky, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Hey, good morning, Chief. It's currently 7:36 here in Chicago. 47 degrees right now with high of 60. Very nice weather, very nice temperature. Variable cloudiness today, though. It said it will be mostly cloudy with a low of 35 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 72 degrees right now with a high of 105. Record-breaking temperatures with a lot of sunshine. So make sure you stay by the shade and stay hydrated. Tonight will be clear and very warm with a low of 75 degrees. Traffic in Chicago. Mild traffic starts at 47th Street inbound, then Ryan, and ends in South Union Avenue. Little congestion from Central to Cicero, inbound Stevenson as well. Eisenhower has heavy traffic building up from Austin to Western Avenue, and beyond that, it's all smooth sailing for now. Other expressways are moving at posted speed. Now for our sports, MLB spring training. Yesterday, the Sox had two games, against Diamondbacks, which they won 4-2, but the second one they lose, which was against Padres 13-6. Today we got two Cubs games, one against the Reds at 8:05 p.m. and another one against Athletics at 8:10 p.m. We also have Diamondbacks Brewers at 8:10 p.m. and White Sox Angels 2:10 p.m. For the NHL, Blackhawks beat Wild 2-1 yesterday, and today they host Avalanche at 7:30 p.m. Lastly, NBA, Bulls lose to Cavaliers 115-110, and Suns lose to Spurs 101-100. That's all I got for you, Chief. Back over to you guys.
Carol, what do you make of the market stuff here? And again, I'm really nervous about these interest rates. And I can't, no matter what, you know, what your thoughts on the current administration's antics in the Middle East and other places. And I wish one of these days, I don't want to talk about it today so much, why exactly are we so pissed off at Cuba? Nothing seems to have changed there in the last however many years. I mean, there's a couple of Russian tankers headed there now, and we're going to not let them land. Now, we let Russia sell oil last week. We've raised the price to $100 to where Putin, to me, is the biggest winner totally in this war in the Middle East. Now, what are we going to do? We're going to sink these things?
Well, that's kind of an interesting question, right? Is that there's all sorts of there's a difference. Okay, so there's a difference between an embargo and a blockade from a legal point of view. All right, a blockade's an act of war.
Well, we do that.
Well, I understand this, okay? I mean, you know, blowing up somebody's ship is, you know, if they refuse to stop, right? There's a question as to whether or not the United States has the authority to seize a non-U.S. flagged vessel in international waters. And there are circumstances under which, yes, we do. Okay, and by the way, yes, other nations do too. It's not just us. But this thing with Cuba gets kind of interesting, but from a standpoint of the markets and where the economy is right now, and you know, and the market realities on this, I think one of the most fascinating things here is that historically speaking, the metals trade has been a very good geopolitical risk hedge It has never been a good inflation hedge compared against anything else. I mean, you know, everybody loves to argue that it is. Well, that's BS. It's never been against, for example, the S&P 500. Okay,
it was if you put gold up against the S&P in the last 10 years, it's almost exact.
Well, but if you put gold up against the S&P from when it became available to buy it, it traded on the open market, you were an absolute fool to be in metals.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And the place where it has, however, historically held up fairly well is geopolitical risk. This time, not so much, right? Because, I mean, if anything, we're closer to a World War III kind of event right now than we've been in the last 40 or 50 years.
I would agree.
And yet, God help you if you bought silver at 100, right, or over. Hope you don't have any leverage on that.
Yeah, that was one hell of a spike.
Well, you're dead if you did that with leverage, right?
Well, the good news is we got caught on calls so early that we still had for our silver people. You know, it sounds like we weren't doing our job, but it happened so fast. We started selling calls when the thing was $30, and we did fine all the way. And all of a sudden, it got to 73, and it ran to 112, and it went up in like a week. So we were stuck with these calls that were $30 in the morning. So when it came flying back down, we didn't lose any dough.
Yeah, but I mean, there's all sorts of stuff like this that comes into this. But where my issue with all of this is that, you know, this harkens back to what happened in 2000, okay? All of a sudden, and you know, by the way, you want another example of it in the current context, same company.
It's always the same people.
Well, literally the same people.
Yeah.
After the 2000 detonation started to really pick up in the spring, there was I made a fairly clean argument that the company that actually set it off, even though from a market cap point of view, they were totally irrelevant, was MicroStrategy, MSTR, which is one of the few that
and they're back in the hunt again today.
Well, again, they're one of the few that got that, you know, went through the blow up and survived it, right? And, you know, a bunch of the other guys that were those high flyers are gone.
Okay, but don't forget, when you talk about 2000, even though the market went down, the people that the decimation was in the NASDAQ piece.
Well, I understand that.
Yeah, but now that's I'm just going to say, I'm going to lob this one out there. That's different than the risks right now, because right now,
well, okay, it's more spread, it's more widespread to a large degree.
Well, then it wasn't a deficit interest rate risk.
Right,
today,
now it is.
Today, if the 10 and 30 year goes to 10%, nobody's going to be safe.
Well, and this is, and what, but one of the
by
things.
By the way, it's MicroStrategy. I'm just helping you out here, Carl. This year in July.
Oh, I know.
Was 442, and now it's 138.
Right. No, I know. I've.
MicroStrategy, these are the guys that have all the Bitcoin leveraged.
By the way,
they even have a real company anymore, or are they just all Bitcoin?
They, I don't know. I mean, you know, Saylor's been, you know, this, all right, whatever. Well, you know what they, I've got the high tick on that, on the yearly chart at 457.22.
Yeah, it was in an interday?
No, that's actually, looks like a close.
Okay. All right.
It looks like a close. That was a, you know, nice green candle. A lot of people appear to have bought into it, and then it dumped like a, you know what, as soon as that happened.
Yeah.
The thing that I think is so interesting about this, though, is that when you look at valuations, all right, valuations have been in the stratosphere for a long time. It's been going on for a while, and you got an awful lot of people that have built retirement level lifestyles around these gains, and you know, I've got people that I know that are, you know, you idiot, you're not in the, you know, in the blah, 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 whatever it is, right? Whether it's NVIDIA or whatever have you. And you know, I'm looking at a guy across the table drinking a beer that's 75 years old. And oh, by the way, he owns three houses, one that he lives in all the time, and the other two are, you know, basically his play properties. And he doesn't own any of them free and clear. They're all geared. And every one of them has a mortgage on it. Oh, by the way, he's got a $40,000 nut just to maintain those on an annual basis, right? Just to own them. and a couple million-dollar portfolio, and he thinks he's perfectly safe in pulling $100,000 a year out of it.
Well, you're gonna borrow. Well, you're gonna borrow $300,000 for an addition on your house because your 401k or your IRA is gonna be $2 million because you've got
right,
this.
But the problem with that is that if you take a 50% loss, okay, you have to instantly stop that draw because not only is the principal smaller, but you've lost all the compounding. All right, and if you don't stop it, you're going to run out of money in 5 years.
Well, there's the thing that I constantly harp about, and I hope, to be honest with you, it never comes to fruition. Especially after the work I did on the medical stuff in honor of Carl, I went back to 2000 and just nudged. What if the CPI had 20% medical care instead of 6.5 as part of your basket?
Right.
And I think I nudged the CPI up 0.5% a year or 0.48 or something, which doesn't seem like a lot. But if
until you take it over 30 years.
Well, but it also means that we've been so close with the government giving us these BS numbers where, okay, you know, your earnings are up 2%, but don't worry, CPI was only up 1.8. Well, if you nudge right. the CPI, it wouldn't matter if people were making 4% more a year.
But they're not.
It's been so close. So right. if you actually nudge the thing to where we're slightly below for 25 years, I think that describes exactly what people's wages and stuff here versus their expenses. It describes exactly where we're at.
Well, Chief, you know...
Do you agree with that or not? I mean, I'm talking on just wages. If there was no...
Right.
I mean, I know from the places we've done work for our money management, we don't... For some reason, we don't have a massive amount of Apple here at PTI. We've got a lot of Microsoft. We've got a lot of individual stocks. But we don't have... I mean, we have people here of Apple, obviously, but it's not... I've done some work for places where it's far and away their biggest stock. And I'm going to say that out of all the stocks out there, it probably was the biggest life changer because every man knew the stock was up, knew it went down to like $5. A lot of people bought into it because they like Steve Jobs. And now, I don't know if it's, I guess it's split, I'm not positive, but and now it's 250. So it has been probably the single biggest life change of any stock in this generation, maybe like where AT&T used to be if you're on a dividend risk in those days, or IBM or something. But this was better. This was better. But, I mean, if all of a sudden these rates go to 10, what does this world look like if Apple's trading 90?
Well, see, that's the problem, is that this is the nature of the compounding that has gone on over the last 30 or 40 years. Corporations have joined the party where they never actually pay off any of their corporate debt. They just roll it.
Right.
Okay? Just like all your cities and your states. Just like the federal government. All right? And as I have pointed out for a long time, and was one of the themes when I wrote Leverage, one of the primary ones, is that when you do this, it looks like you're getting a free lunch at the beginning, but you're not. And if you don't stop, the interest expense goes vertical.
Well, it even gets worse.
And when it goes vertical, you can't cover it, all right? So we are now in the at this point at the federal level and at the state level. And again, part of the reason that you're having so many of these scandals that are now showing up where, you know, basically let's just steal it, right? Yeah. It's essentially the gist of it. What people don't understand about theft at that kind of a scale, or really any scale, but when it becomes commercialized, it becomes so, the reason it becomes so dangerous is that in any commercial context, everybody's looking for growth. All right, whether it's a government, government's just a company, all right? I mean, you know, okay, supposedly not, but yes, it is. Anytime that you have that and that occurs, that compounded growth rate gets put into the scam. The scam ends up being, within 5 or 10 years, more than the benefit from whatever the original program was, and it's all stolen. And the reason that government officials don't stop it is because if I produce something that I sell for $100, whether it's a good or a service, not all of that immediately drops to GDP and spending because I have an operating margin on that. I had to spend something in order to make that good or that service. It's not, the operating margin is never 100%. The operating margin on stolen funds is always 100%.
Well, yeah.
And so the person who figures out how to steal spends all of that in the economy, every dime of it. They don't give it back to the employee. They don't give it back to the Joe's steel company that made the steel that got pressed into the part.
The leverage, Carl. I mean, and again, we can dig into this leverage. You know, obviously, I did a lot of this when I was at Pullman and other places. But the when you have companies that I'm going to say have not learned their lesson. We had a debate with one of the guys here in the office yesterday about stock buybacks. And we had a guest on the show a while back, and I think, don't quote me on this, but it was 5 to 7 to 10 years that virtually all the new money entering the market was stock buybacks.
Yeah.
And now where I'm going with this is, you know, pick an individual. When you have a company that has leverage, now leverage, if done properly, is a good thing for owners. It's not a bad thing. But it also can go the other way. You have to be careful, obviously, and you always get the win. Now, we're never going to pay a dividend, okay? Because that drops the price of the stock, and all the schmucks that are on top of the place have these stock options. So, I mean, if you went into a board meeting and said, you know, by the way, I think we should increase the dividend, and all these guys have stock options, you might as well have taken a stink bomb in there, right? I mean, it's the same deal. But you look at say United Airlines, and this is from a few years ago. I don't know if they're still doing this, but we're talking about a company that two times in the last, in 9/11, the company had been in business for 65 years, and they were out of business for 3 weeks, and they're broke.
Right.
So there's not a whole lot of thought process going there. Now, these guys, they buy their stock back, and they that's really where most of their money goes. I think they pay somewhat of a dividend. But every plane that they buy is leveraged.
Right.
And so, I mean, if Carl and I were on the board, we might say something like, gee, you know, this month, instead of buying the stock back, why don't we actually show up at Boeing and write them a check? So, like, this plane we actually own.
Right.
The look on people's faces, are we going to be ushered out or carried out? Or?
Well, you might get shot.
You might get shot. And yet, this is just... And what was it? When else did they almost go belly up? Was it 2007? Some other. Yeah. It's been twice in the last 30 years. But yet, right now today, I bet they lease every plane they have.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, they might buy some of the ones that, you know, if they all of a sudden get, you know, a lot of stuff and they go to the desert and say we need a plane for 6 months, they might buy that one, you know, or something and rehab it to get something in the group quick, or if Boeing can't make the delivery. But by and large, the whole thing is leased. The thing is totally leveraged. So if something bad happens and they can't fly a plane for what? What's their break even? Three weeks they're out of business?
Well, yeah.
I mean this is insanity.
Well, of course it is.
But I mean, this is where all this goes. And now when you talk about $1.3 trillion margin interest on stuff, I am not predicting any of this. But the weird part is, it doesn't seem like that long to me, Carl, because I was there. But you know, the inflation of the 70s and 80s and 87 crash and those kinds of things. It's almost like, because it leaves a hole in your heart. They're like they're yesterday. I remember them like they were yesterday. And when I talk to people and I say, you know, with our deficit the way it is, if we get any sort of a pushback from people that our president insults every damn day, Europe is now the biggest people kicking money into our coffers. And only he could be dumb enough to insult people that lend you money. I mean, Jesus. I mean, I can't even go there. But so, if all of a sudden these rates, people all know that the Fed could only raise a quarter point three times next year in a worse situation.
Why?
No, they can't. You know, and you see headlines like this: Trump invokes emergency powers with $23 billion in Gulf arms sales as Iran war wages on. Well, how do you? How do you declare an emergency when you're the one who made the emergency?
Well, as I've pointed out, one of the things that's been flying around in various areas
you know, the lie that Iran was, you know, had nuclear weapons, we had to blow them up because of that. I've gone through that at a physics level detail for people, and the fact of the matter is that that's just absolute BS. First off, at 60% enrichment, it won't even explode.
This doesn't make Iran good people. It doesn't make.
I didn't say they were good people. I just said that the claim is a lie.
Right.
Okay. That at 60% enrichment, it will not detonate, regardless of how much of it you have. And secondly, nobody in their right mind actually makes uranium-fueled nuclear weapons anymore. We exploded one at Hiroshima. However, the next one that we detonated at Nagasaki was made with plutonium, and they all are today. And there are some very good reasons for that, having to do with yield and the ease of management and how you handle them and da-da-da. You know, there's 100 reasons why that would be the case. Now, if you wanted to make a crude weapon, you can make a crude weapon with very
Things very dirty. You can do all kinds of bad stuff.
You can do all kinds of bad stuff with a uranium bomb, but it's and you can actually make one that will.
What do you need for a dirty bomb? Anything? Would you say anything for that?
Well, this is the big problem is that any nation that has an operating nuclear plant, which Iran does, Bashir, okay, has tons of high-level radioactive waste from that plant. Most of this stuff, and the reason it's such a problem is that most of this is in the actinide series, which is all synthetic elements. They don't exist in nature. They exist in a reactor. That's how they get created. Many of them have half-lives in the thousands of years.
That's a while.
Well, they're dangerous for 10,000 or 100,000 years. You take that stuff, you grind it up, make it into a powder, put it in a conventional shell or a conventional bomb of some kind, or rocket or whatever have you, and shoot it at somebody, and you've just created an active denial zone that's almost impossible to clean up, and you can't step on that land for 10,000 years.
The Hiroshima stuff, you could go back there fairly soon, right?
Oh, yeah, because the amount of actual material that fissioned and therefore was able to make those long-lived isotopes was tiny.
Well, you know, that's
the whole reason that that dirty bombs are so nasty, is that you've taken the stuff that in a nuclear explosion is a vanishingly small amount of material, okay? Yes, nuclear bombs are bad, but they don't make much of that simply because the amount of material that actually goes boom is really tiny. You put it in a reactor, you get a huge amount of that stuff.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I was discussing stuff the other night when people were talking about, you know, we got to worry about Z and we got to worry about North Korea.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, how many countries has China or North Korea bombed in the last 13 months? We're none. I said, well, how many have we bombed?
How many have we bombed, right?
We bombed seven, and we're leaning towards Ecuador and Cuba.
Well, the Cuba thing, I just don't understand.
It's there and he wants it. It's the closer Greenland.
I know.
Does anybody think that we should be doing this?
Well, apparently some people do. My issue with this, as it stands right now, is that, as I have pointed out for a very long time, behind every unit of GDP is a unit of energy. Okay, there's no getting around this. It's just a material fact. In order to produce something that you can sell, and we all want some of those things to exist, we may differ on exactly which things should be produced, but we all want things to be produced because, it's really nice when you go to the can and the toilet flushes, right?
Yep.
And the reality is behind every unit of that output is a unit of energy. Now, if we're going to get involved in this sort of adventure, the very first thing that had to be done at the point that began is all exports of energy resources out of the United States had to be banned instantly.
We got the right people are making money there.
Well, you know what? You want to talk about a global dislocation that comes back and takes 50 to 75% off the equity markets and all the other asset markets and crashes housing and crashes all this other stuff, you're staring at it. Because what just happened over there is Israel, in their insanity, blew up about 17% of the largest LNG gas fields over at Qatar.
All right. Now,
we don't have much. You know, before we got like a minute, but just a quick political comment. I see the Trump Netanyahu brohood lasting about another 3 days. What happens when that blows up?
Well, that's going to get real interesting. But here's the thing about that. It's going to take 3 to 5 years to put that part of their plant back online. That's not something you can fix in an afternoon. All right.
It's so easy to destroy stuff, isn't it?
Well, and you know what? And those countries, I mean, we've done some of this.
How do we know that? Well, some people in Israel or people here don't own some natural gas stuff.
Well,
in
I don't know. But look,
yeah.
We've done some of the stupid green energy crap in this country. Okay. But the countries that have done the most of it are going to get it. The number of holes that you get it in and the depth to which you get drilled in them is directly related to how much of that stupidity you've engaged
in. Okay, the only issue with that is, I'm with you on this stuff. I want stuff to be done intelligently, okay? When I drove across Route 66, now I-40, and I'm driving along in this relentless winds and bearing down sun, and I see a Santa Fe train go by me. In this area, there's no way that you don't have wind and solar powering the locomotives for 500 miles in this area. Now, but I'm with you in the sense that we don't go crazy. We make an assessment of where this stuff makes sense and where we can do it effectively, and we do it. But other areas, you don't. But the other thing, if we foolishly decide we're not going to have as much oil. But the thing of it is, the oil's still in the ground here.
You have to be energy self-sufficient.
I understand
that. We are today, and we can be. And oh, by the way, we have 500.
I'm saying, but it doesn't mean the areas that I'm talking about. And I'm not, I don't
Chief,
want.
We have 500 years worth of CTL.
Okay, I'm saying I don't want stuff on people's houses when it's in the Northern Hemisphere. I think that makes no sense. But why in this massive desert near Hoover Dam, when you got all the wires right there, you don't have a big solar farm? I have no idea.
We're stupid on all sides with this. Okay,
and I you would agree that. Wait a minute! Look, the sun's dancing off the ground here.
Well,
grab some of it.
Well, except where do I have to source the material to make these things? Because here's what you're looking at right now. You have all of Europe. Okay, and if Europe learned nothing from the Ukrainian dust-up when Nord Stream got blown up.
The difference between me and the people you're railing against, okay, is I look at this and I say, if ever there's a place where it would make sense if it does, it would be right here. We're 50 feet from the wires, for God's sake. And, oh, by the way, it looks to me like nobody's living here. There isn't even a grasshopper out here. We're not wrecking anything. Now, if you say to me, the places we have to source the stuff and get rid of it when time goes and the maintenance, it doesn't make sense even here. I'm going to be one of those people who says, you know, I believe Carl, and if it doesn't make sense here, it doesn't make sense anywhere.
Well, I don't know if it does or doesn't.
I'm saying if it were to make sense.
Where absolutely it doesn't, and that's in the middle of Michigan.
I don't disagree.
In February.
I don't disagree. But when I can barely keep my heavy-duty pickup truck on the road, I'm saying, if ever there's a place for a windmill, it's got to be here. I don't see any birds. I don't see anything. But if it doesn't make sense there, where would it?
Well,
is my point.
Yeah, and that's the thing. But my most important aspect of this is that, okay, drill baby drill, whatever. We are now in a position where we're effectively energy self-sufficient. We can be. That doesn't mean that, you know, everything is peaches and keen and everything else. It's just that as things stand today, and oh, by the way, if we use coal to liquids, which we know how to do, Germany figured this one out, World War II, China, by the way, is doing it with an awful lot of the coal we're exporting to them, all right, which is stupid.
Save this for Tuesday. I think John's gonna be back on Monday.
If we have 500 years worth of that resource here on this land.
I got a real dumb question for you regarding windmills. You know, you probably know the answer. The windmill were the things that go whop, whop, whop.
Right.
They were thinking about putting windmills on a redone Sears Tower. What happened to the windmills that look like...
The density is not high enough.
Okay. What happened to the windmills that, or the wind turbines that look like a big globe, but they're kind of perforated and they spin where there's no birds running? I don't even see those on the
market.
They're
not efficient. They're nowhere near efficient enough. They don't have enough swept area to capture the wind.
So they don't. They're useless.
Yeah.
Because they were hot for a while and.
Well, they're fine if you need small scale power somewhere.
Okay.
But a utility scale, they don't work. They don't capture enough of the flow.
But I mean, if you had a farm someplace, would they power your night lights outside or something?
Yeah, or for that matter, maybe your ground source pump for irrigation.
Okay, so I mean they're not totally useless, but not commercially useless. Useful.
Right. Yeah, well, at utility scale, they're useless.
So are you going up to Michigan and catch the last snow or not?
I'm seriously contemplating it. Yes.
Well, you might want to go before it melts.
Well, I'll tell you what, the West is getting just baked, and
yeah. By the way, last question. They're talking about massive record El Nino. What is that? What's that going to do?
Well, we got to see whether or not we got to see what develops. Give me another month. Right? April, May, I'll make a call on this. All right, but the possibility that last year was everybody was and I called exactly where that was going in May and was right. We'll see. But if it goes where they think it's going to go, and again, I'm not going to stick my neck out.
Last year was neutral, pretty much, right?
Last year was neutral, which is extremely unusual. Normally, it's one way or the other. But if we actually get this, you would expect a significant. It changes the path of the jet stream. You would expect drier and hotter in the West. You would expect more tropical activity that potentially hits the United States. The vectors change. And the probability of those storms coming inland goes up substantially.
Does anybody know what the El Nino situation was during the Dust Bowl?
Not really, but the funny thing is everyone talk. We're cooking the planet. Get rid of your SUV, electric car. Da 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 da. Excuse me. During the Dust Bowl, that obviously was not the case, right? But the other thing was that some of that was due to the farming practices at the time, which essentially left the ground unprotected. Well, and then you got the wind and it blew off all the topsoil.
That part, yes. But the fact that those were the absolute driest years in Colorado and other places, that wasn't affected by farmers.
Oh, no, not at all. And the thing is people are all caterwauling about it all being...
I think there were some of the hottest years in Chicago, too.
And yes, and there were some records that were set... And one of the things that confounds a lot of this is that land was very poorly settled compared to today, right? So there aren't records for a lot of these.
But nobody knows
places.
The El Nino La Nina situation from the 30s.
I don't believe so. I think there have been people that have claimed they've tried to reconstruct it, but you can't prove they're right.
Okay. All right, but we got a dash. You have a nice weekend. Are you watching the games? Is your bracket shot, or do you bet the individual games?
They call it March Madness. I choose not to be mad. So
I bet you could have got some good odds on the team that came back in the second half and beat North Carolina. Boy, if you could have made a halftime bet there, I think you're laughing.
I'm just not into it. So,
all right, but I'm you know what? The stuff we were talking about earlier, I'm not all that happy with the DraftKings of the world having some huge pack. Putting people in office? I don't know. I don't think
any of this stuff ought to be legal.
I don't either. Anyway, buddy, take care. So, Ricky, nice job as usual. SP Futures down 21, right where we were when we came in. And as if you don't want to wait, that's why we haven't been beating up on it, because it's the same spot. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.